This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. 43% of Massachusetts stores were out of baby formula in the first week of May, according to Datassembly, a data analytics firm. It all roughly began, with the short-term shuttering of a baby formula factory owned by one of the major producers, Abbott Nutrition, due to safety concerns after bacterial infections in four infants. Two of those infants died. It has spiraled into massive nationwide shortages, with at times more than 40% of national chains, for example, out of stock. If that is all your infant can eat, or even just a key part of your baby's diet, that is a life-altering shortage. The Biden administration, feeling the heat, announced it is working with U.S. manufacturers to streamline production, get the plant back online, increase imports of formulas from overseas. All of it's going to take time, though. So how is that affecting parents and babies here? If this shortage has impacted you directly, we want to hear from you right now. Tweet us at Radio Boston, or if you're in our text group, text us 617-766-0382. That's 617-766-0382. And we've already got some of that coming in. So we'll look forward to adding your voices to this story. We're joined here in the studio by the executive director of the Mother's Milk Bank Northeast, Deborah Youngblood, and WBUR's multi-platform editor who's been covering the issue, Megan Kelly. Megan, welcome.
Thank you.
Deborah, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
So, Megan, let's start with some of the coverage. You've been really tracking this issue. What have you seen as the impact of this shortage here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, so I talked to last week a couple parents in the area who have been struggling to find formula for their infants, and they're really stressed. They're really worried that they can't find the sustenance that their baby needs. You know, a couple people told me that they haven't been able to find stuff for a couple of weeks, and they've been calling stores, and they're all out of stock, or, you know, you can only buy one or two cans at a time. It's very stressful if you have a baby who, you know, babies under a year are really only supposed to consume formula or breast milk, and if you can't have, if you don't have access to that, it's like, what do you do? It's terrifying. It's really scary to think about.
Have you spoken with anybody who's out, who is at a moment where they don't have a way to feed their infant?
Yeah. So I talked to Estefania Rodriguez. She lives in Haverhill, and she has a daughter who's about 5 months old, Liliana. And Liliana has a milk protein allergy, which means that she can only have a very specific type of hypoallergenic formula. And Estefania has been able to find stuff from about a month ago, but she is very worried that her supply is going to run out and she's not going to be able to find anymore.
We would be lucky and find three cans here and there. You know, they were at like $42. A couple weeks went by and they bumped up the price to $63.99. For one can. Mind you, at the time, my baby was still like 3 months old, eating every 3 hours. Like, one can will literally last me 3 days at the most. And you're telling me that $63 for one can just because of the shortage?
So it's really like, that really scared you. I mean, and my heart really went out to her because my son, who is now 10, had a similar kind of allergy, and the formula that I could get for him was in this tiny can. It was $25 a can, but it was a really small can that only made a couple of bottles. And it's terrifying to think, even 10 years on, it's terrifying to think that I couldn't feed him.
So I'm going to bring Deborah, you into the conversation now, and this is going to be a wide-ranging chat, I think, but I want to start with, I'm assuming your organization has been getting more calls since this shortage. So maybe yes and no on that, and tell us a bit about what Mother's Milk Bank Northeast does and how it works.
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, our phones have absolutely been ringing off the hook. Interestingly, we're sort of hearing from both sides. So, you know, we're hearing from a lot of moms who want to be part of the solution, and they're reaching out and saying, how can I become a milk donor? I want to help feed another baby. And that's, of course, a beautiful response.
And to clarify, those have to be people who are lactating now.
They do. They do. So we're really looking for, you know, women who are lactating now and whose own baby is getting everything that they need, and she has more supply beyond that. So those are the moms who can donate. And there's a full screening process that happens and, you know, testing that needs to go on for our product particularly. But of course, as Megan said, you know, we're also hearing from frantic parents, parents who are looking for new options for their babies. Nonprofit milk banks, our primary mission is to provide safe, pasteurized donor human milk to medically fragile babies. So most of our milk is going to neonatal intensive care units in hospitals all throughout the northeastern U.S. When we have milk beyond that, and we often do, then we're able to supply families with small amounts. So it's really what we consider bridge milk. It's a very short-term option for people.
So are you feeling like you're seeing a moment where the supply of these kinds of alternatives, there's no way to meet the need that we could be facing?
I think that, you know, nonprofit milk banks are a piece of the puzzle, but we won't be able to resolve the infant formula sort of shortage and this crisis alone. We're excited to be, you know, a solution, and we want to try to help parents as best we can. That's a big part of our mission. I think it also speaks to, you know, looking at the longer term. Parents need this crisis resolved right now, and that's going to take health officials and, you know, the federal government, as you've talked about. But I think if we take the long view, I think that there's a bigger role for milk banks in the future, and we're really poised for that growth. And I also think that, you know, there's a conversation to be had about how do we better support moms for whom breastfeeding is a desirable choice and a medically available option for them and their babies to breastfeed. I think we could perhaps become less reliant on formula companies as a country.
Okay, so I want to put a couple of things in place here, and then, Megan, I'm going to come back to you. First, I want to pick up a comment from one of our texting group members. This is Joanne in Chelmsford. And Joanne texted in, quote, "My daughter's now an adult, but I've seen a lot on social media from people telling new moms to just breastfeed. And it's not as simple as that. Some moms choose to use formula or cannot breastfeed. This is an important part of the conversation," end quote. And I brought Joanne there because there are two caveats I want to place on the table now, both for listeners, for us to be mindful. One, we are having this conversation in a charged environment. Here in the New England region and larger nationally, there's a lot of tension and controversy and conversations about formula versus breastfeeding, what's choice, what's necessity. Also in an environment where breastfeeding can equal pumping and producing milk in other environments, which can also be complicated. I want to name all of that as we go forward with this conversation. I also want to name that there's a lot about gender. And gender identity that's in this conversation as well. You know, I'm mindful that there are some people, for example, who prefer the phrase chest feeding to breastfeeding. So I just want to note that there's a gender dimension to the conversation we're having, and that there's controversy here that's sitting in the middle of the table, and that I think in different ways we've probably all experienced. I know I did with my two kids. So thanks for letting me flag that. Megan, let me turn back to you there to pick it up.
Yeah, so I think it's a couple things that come to mind when you're talking about that. One is that, you know, back when my kids were both of a nursing age, people would say things to me like, oh, breastfeeding is free. And, you know, I did nurse both of my kids supplemented with formula. It was a great experience, but it was very difficult. It's only free if you consider a woman's time to be worth nothing. It meant, you know, free, sure, yes, but I had to get up every 2 hours in the middle of the night. You know, my husband wasn't getting up with them because they were breastfeeding. I had to pump at work, and that didn't work out for me all the time, so it was really hard. You know, there one thing that my pediatrician had said to me is that the baby needs to be fed, and there's no judgment with that, right? It's not a moral choice. The baby needs to be fed. If it's formula, if it's breast milk, if it's you get breast milk from a bank, whatever it is, right? The baby needs to be fed, and that's the most important thing. And I hope that people can understand that, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to do in the world, whatever you decide to do, but whatever you decide to do is really what's best for you and your family, and that people need to understand that what might have worked for you isn't going to work for everybody else.
So I'm going to pick up another submission from our texting club. This is Keiko in Swampscott. Quote, "I had an NPR driveway moment. listening to a podcast about the shortage and found myself sobbing listening to stories of mothers just trying to feed their babies. I remember what it was like to be that mom 9 years ago. My son was a preemie who needed specialty formula that was expensive and hard to find. And that was 9 years ago when there was no national shortage. I couldn't stop thinking about those moms of preemies who are having trouble now, and I just felt compelled to do something about it. I know how to build websites. I know how to do marketing, so I created freeformulaexchange.com. As a simple solution to solve for the complex problem. So there's more from Keiko, but I want to pick it up there because I want to ask both of you to talk about, okay, so babies have to eat. We have this crazy shortage. And before we finish, I want to talk about how we got here a little bit too. People will have to solve for the problem. There are safe ways to do that. There are unsafe ways to do that. There are voluntary ways to do that. There are financial ways to do that. So let's talk a little bit in that space. Let's talk about safety, Deborah, and thinking about how to volunteer or be supportive from a milk bank standpoint, but also make sure that there is quality and safety there.
Yeah, I think that that's really important in this moment. And I just want to reiterate what you were both saying as well, which is that parents have, excuse me, a lot going on. And judgment does not have a place in this conversation right now. We need to be solution oriented. That said, I think that, you know, and I know people have heard this and it may not be what they're wanting to hear at this moment, but you really have to talk to your pediatrician. Because infant nutrition is critically important. It's always important, but that first year of development is a really critical year. And so you need to talk to your pediatrician to try to work through your specific situation and ensure that your baby is getting only a safe nutritional product.
And Megan, in this idea of formula exchanges, are you seeing informal networks pop up of how people are trading goods and helping each other out? And also cautions, no-nos, don't do this while you're trying to solve your problem?
Yeah, absolutely. So this morning we had a brief segment, and then it's also on our website right now.
WBUR.org.
Yep, WBUR.org, about this local group on Facebook called the Formula Fairies. If you go on Facebook, it's like the Formula Fairies of Greater Boston and Southern New Hampshire. It's five moms who really just wanted to help other people. It's kind of like a matchmaking thing. People will say, oh, I need this kind of formula. And other people will say, oh, okay, great. I'm going food shopping today. If they have it, I'll grab it for you. And then, you know, we can meet up to exchange it. So that's really heartening to see. I think it was the woman that I talked to, Ariane DeLovo, was just like, she just really wanted to help. And it was such a wonderful thing to see moms helping other moms and other caregivers just kind of find that stuff. The other thing, last week for the formula shortage story, I talked to a pediatric GI at Children's who was very keen to say, please do not make your own formula. It is a very delicate balance of electrolytes, nutrition, vitamins, et cetera. I've seen some homemade recipes floating around on the internet. Please don't use them. You know, they can cause dehydration. They can cause an electrolyte unbalance. They're not safe. And so, like Deborah said, you really need to talk to your doctor about it because they're going to know what is best for your baby. And they might also have samples that they can give you as well.
So, Deborah, I want to change hats with you because you were Commissioner of Health and Human Services for the City of Newton for 6 years. So somebody who's been in a Health and Human Services administration, how do you size up the moment we're in and what solutions do you expect to see the government, local governments provide? We talked about what the Biden administration is and isn't doing, but wear that hat for a sec.
Yeah. So, you know, when we find ourselves in these kinds of scenarios, it's a lot of pressure on local governments because ultimately we rely on our state and our federal partners. And, you know, I think that one of the things that I know from having been the health commissioner is the role of the FDA and the necessity of being very stringent in terms of food safety regulations and making sure that those factories who are producing a product that's going to the most vulnerable among us, or some of the most vulnerable among us, they have to be diligent in that work. At the same time, you know, we saw a vacuum, right? It took too long for us to move forward and to begin to really kind of feel that fire and say, like, you know, we're at this crisis point, like we need formula now.
Yeah, to that point, the lab shut down like in February.
Right.
And that was after a warning from last fall that took several months to unfold. So Megan, you know, a couple minutes left. What are we hearing on the policy front now? Or what are you hearing people are hoping to see from government and private sector now?
So one thing that I believe we learned yesterday was that Abbott is going to start reopening one of its factories. They're working with the government, you know, to make sure that everything is safe and clean. But it's still going to take maybe 6 to 8 weeks for them really to get back into, you know,
full
previous
production.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I'm seeing a lot is that people were a little dismayed that it took so long. I mean, this has been happening since February. And, you know, I feel terrible that I didn't know about it, but I don't have any babies in my circle. I don't have any babies in my house. But a lot of, like, legislators didn't know either. And I think there's a real desire out there for people. They want the people representing them in Congress and at the State House to know that, like, you should be up on top of this stuff. You should know it. This shouldn't have happened. You know, if one factory goes offline, then maybe there could have been other ways to mitigate this without just letting it happen.
All right. I think we're going to end there. That is Megan Kelly, WBUR's multi-platform editor, and Deborah Youngblood, the executive director of the Mother's Milk Bank Northeast. Megan, thanks.
Thanks so much, Tiziana.
And Deborah, thank you.
Glad to be here.
And we appreciated those who submitted comments to us, too. If you'd like to join our texting group, and we hope you will, I can't wait to hear from you. Get started by texting the word BOSTON to 617